Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Thursday, 9 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, we'll be chatting with Alan Robin Lukabela from Perpetua. I want to touch on those SPA results, and if we've got a moment, comparison versus the other food retailers. Keith McLachlan on preference shares. The preference share market is shrinking, but there are some good yields there right now. And then Gonsalves Hartsey, he's from Old Mutual, talking about missed opportunities at the World Economic Forum. Remember that Davos was delayed. He's saying we could have done more, perhaps, for as a continent, as Africa, to create some of our own platforms. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Relief from distressed beneficiaries still not received in April and May. These are the 350 Rand grants due to about 11 million people that just weren't paid in April and May. And it's tough out there, and suddenly you don't get what little you thought you would. Business Day capital raise still best course for Tongaat, says the CEO. I don't disagree with him on that. I think just his current plan for capital raise might be heading out the door, and he might need a plan B, or maybe it's C or D, whatever it might be. Morning markets, US markets were red overnight. S&P down 1.1%, NASDAQ off 0.75%. Asia is mixed. We've got Sydney down almost 1%, and Tokyo up 0.1%. Commodities overnight mixed. Gold, 1,857. Brent, $123.90 a barrel. Platinum, $1,007 an ounce. Palladium, $1,963, back below the 2,000 level. Rand, 15.30. Top 40 opening call, red open, 180 points to the downside. That's about 0.25%. That as Tencent trades up just over 1% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now to Lon Robert Mkbela, Portfolio Manager at Perpetua Asset Managers. Lon Robert, appreciate the early morning. The SPA results, I mean, lots of moving parts. Alcohol really strong, but distorted by the fact that they had 70 less trading days in the previous period. Switzerland, okay. Poland, still losing. Perhaps for me, the biggie was the dividend was cut, but they had warned us about that. Your take on the SPA numbers?
Hi, yes, and good morning, Simon. I thought it wasn't a bad set of results. It's kind of in line with expectations, up 3.5%, relative to the comparative. And you're right. I mean, the alcohol sales clearly did have a big bounce compared to the soft base, last year. Yeah, I noted that, the food, or the grocery part of the business grew 4.5%, so, it's kind of mid single digits. But they did also mention that, inflation is starting to come through. So, it was 5% in March, 6% in April, 7% in May, so definitely something that's going to be, I think, felt by consumers, generally. Switzerland, they did have a big bonanza, last year, with COVID and lockdown. So people couldn't cross the border where they typically do their shopping. So, this year with reopening, that's part of the reason why sales were a bit softer. So down some 1 point or just down 2% in local currency terms, but still up roughly about 10% pre-COVID. So they seem to have certainly gained market share there. And then Poland, they're essentially losing 2 rands a share per annum. So 15% of group profits. If you think that the share probably earns about 12 rand. So, that's quite significant. I mean, it has improved. So they did reduce losses by about 20%. Mm-hmm. And the key for them there is to actually grow loyalty from their retailers, so that the retailers buy more from them. So it's currently at about 30% in the south. And as an example, in the north, it's about double that, so they've got to increase it, in order to then improve the break-even odds. I mean, they're at the point now where I guess the retailers have to commit, otherwise they'll take management action. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops.
if we compare, I mean, lots of moving parts. I take your point that it's not a bad set all in all. If we compare them to perhaps Pick and Pay, ShopRite, who had results out a month or so back, Pick and Pay certainly turned the corner, and of course ShopRite, the winner in the space.
Yeah, I mean, ShopRite, yeah, I mean, as an example, ShopRite in South Africa is kind of growing 11%, so double the rate mm-hmm. that SPAR's growing at. And definitely 66 has been a large contributor to that. As well as, I guess, another fresh store. So, yeah, so absolutely ShopRite's been the standout. And then Pick and Pay and ShopRite are quite similar. Sorry, and SPAR, yeah. They look like they're quite similar.
Yeah, so that does kind of leave ShopRite as, I suppose, in many senses, the leader in the space there. Quick last point on that dividend which they cut. I mean, they had warned us that it was going to happen. The market seemed comfortable with that.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, I mean, they have guided, you know, that it's a 2-year period that they, you know, they need the cash flows to invest into SAP. You know, and then in all likelihood will restore the dividend. They're quite cash generative businesses. So, you know, I envisage that once they complete the SAP implementation, they'll be able to restore that dividend.
Yeah, as you point out, there are strong cash generation in the space. Morbo Mkabela, Portfolio Manager, Perpetua Asset Managers, appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. SPAR, what did you think of the results? Happy with them? Disappointed? Not really your preferred retailer? For me, not my preferred retailer. I'm very much a ShopRite fan. That's where I do my investing and try and do most of my shopping. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan, Investment Officer at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning time. Preference shares, I suppose let's kick off first quickly. I mean, in essence, these are not normal equity shares. They're more, they're debt instruments, albeit they're on the JSE, and they pay dividends linked to prime.
Absolutely. Morning, Simon. So preference shares are hybrid financial instruments, and you're correct about the ones listed on the JSE. They're predominantly, effectively debt instruments, but that's not to say all preference shares are. Mm-hmm. Some of them can be convertible. Some of them have equity portions to them and things like that. The point is that they're exotic equity or debt instruments. So each one can be written with very unique terms to it. It's best to understand that.
Yeah, I remember that. The terms, non-redeemable, non-cumulative, non-non, and all the other bits and pieces there. What we are seeing in our market is, you know, we've got to know which ones are which, but we're seeing a shrinking sector generally. We were chatting, I mean, you know, back in the sort of 2000s, it was a fast-growing sector, but it's shrinking and disappearing, particularly from some of the big banks.
Yes, it's quite sad to see that, but what's happened in the background is Basel III liquidity requirements and our view of our domestic reserve bank has placed the local banking preference shares into a very unattractive tier of liquidity, i.e. not very liquid. Mm-hmm. So the banks, it's in their interest to buy them back, because whereas these were quite cheap funding mechanisms back in the day, and hence they were listed, and issued, and they made use of them, it's now the complete opposite. They're actually quite expensive from a banking perspective. So, I mean, we're seeing all these banks buying their preference shares back, which is quite sad, because it's wonderful to have these exotic instruments listed. But that's not to say that those are the only instruments. Grindrod and Victor, Netcare, they have preference shares as well.
Yeah, and that's it. There is a fairly chunky range of what I would call it's sort of tier two. So they're not the big four or five banks, but they're still perfectly quality. 10%, and there's some good yield lurking around in the space.
Definitely. So I would say of the non-banks, the biggest non-bank preference share attaches to Discovery. Now, you've got to be careful. Its code is DSBP, and what that says to me is that it actually doesn't attach to the hold co. It attaches to a subsidiary underneath it. The moment you've got you've effectively got the code that's different to the big entity, it's not attaching to the big entity, much like PSG's old preference shares used to. But insurance liquidity requirements, which are SAMs, is quite different to the banking ones, and at this point they're not being penalized from it. But below that, you've got Grinrod, you've got Victor, you've got Netcare, you even have Steinhoff, but I'm not sure if we should talk about that one.
I'd actually forgotten about that Steinhoff one. And I mean, what sort of yields? I mean, I mentioned up front that they're linked to prime, so usually they're paying a percentage of the prime rate. They of course paid off their nominal, their sort of issue price, not necessarily the price that they're trading at in the market, but we're seeing some fairly good sort of high single digit yields, and of course paid as dividend, which if you've got tax implications can be quite a benefit.
Absolutely. So ignoring, for example, the RECM Caliber, which is actually technically also a preference share, but it attaches to assets and it actually operates effectively like equity, not like debt. Of the debt-based preference shares, all of them in our market pay a percentage of prime based on their par value. Now, what the price they trade at in the market, they're all trading at somewhere between 80 to 90%, somewhere in that range of par value, and that creates a yield. So if we look at the current prime rate and we roll it forward, so we assume it's flat, which at this point, we're actually in a rising interest rate environment, which implies a forward prime rate. You're looking at a dispersion of forward dividend yields of somewhere from 8 to 9, you know, Invicta, for example, is as high as 10%. So these are quite attractive dividend yields. Obviously, if you're coming from a private investor perspective, you need to chop out dividend withholding tax. But these are still very attractive post-tax yields, especially if you've tapped out in terms of your interest rate exemption, your interest exemption in your personal income tax. This is a nice way of generating relatively high yield above and beyond that. That's actually not correlated to all the normal things.
And there's the ETF from CoreShares, the PrefT, but that's got some of the biggies in it, so that makes it perhaps a slightly lower yield. You can essentially build your own. I mean, I know you like Invicta, I know you like the Grinrod one. You could sort of buy two or three, maybe four of them, and put your own sort of preference share portfolio together for that yield.
Well, certainly, I would argue the non-banking preference shares are becoming more attractive as the banks delist theirs. So a market with less opportunities in it, those remaining opportunities become more attractive because investors have less alternatives other than investing in them. I mean, it is going to be interesting to see as the banking market delists all their preference shares eventually, and First Rand preference shares, for example, are under cautionary to delist. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see what exactly Pref Tracks realigns to. This is the shortcomings of ETFs, is it's a forced buyer of the remaining preference shares. And that pool gets much smaller and smaller. So we've used Grinrod and Victor preference shares to good effect. They're both reasonably liquid. They're both attached to well-run businesses in the background with comfortable balance sheets. Because remember, profits are great, but you're actually looking at credit risk here. So counterparty risk is quite key. We think those two preference shares are quite attractive and become increasingly attractive as the banking portion of the market shrinks.
Yeah, man, that's a good point. And CoreShares, and I've chatted with Gareth Stobie around it, they are struggling. They're sort of, 65% of the portfolio is the Standard Bank, APSA, and First Rand Pref shares. And if they disappear, what do they do? I suppose they make a plan, but plan's not the plan. Keith McLachlan, Investment Officer, Integral Asset Management. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs. no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlip.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlip Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Gonzo Sarzi, head of retail client management, Old Mutual Investment Group. Gonzo, appreciate the early morning time. A piece that you wrote earlier in the week around the World Economic Forum, which was in Davos, postponed from January, held in May, just last month. You're making the point that there was some missed opportunity from Africa as a continent to kind of create our own platforms, particularly around ESG, around climate change.
Good morning, Simon, and thanks for the opportunity. Yes, that was the point I was making, especially when you look at the challenges that we face in the local economy, especially around energy and our reliance on coal, and also some of the downstream impacts of that onto people. I think right now in Joburg there's quite a big stink.
Yeah.
And some of that there are people suspect that it could be linked to some of the coal mining further up in Mpumalanga. So, yeah, I think we've got so many opportunities where we can unpack those things with the lens that is closer towards Africa and South Africa.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, you know, the World Economic Forum, we can debate the pros and cons of it, and there's lots on both sides. But if we look at Africa in its totality, and yes, it's you know, 52 different nations and each one unique and different, but in many senses, we are sitting as a continent in a different space in terms of climate change to much of, you know, particularly thinking Europe and North America, and therefore need to take that challenge on our own shoulders.
Absolutely. I think not only climate change, but if you look at ESG in the broader sense, with environment just being one piece of it. And I think people do have that power. Two of the things where we can show our power or have an influence is how you interact with the world. I mean, people mm-hmm. through practices like recycling, seeking out service providers that are responsible in how they source. This could be either clothing manufacturer or it could be the sourcing of other products such as food products, retailers. And also a lot of people in South Africa, funny enough, while we're still on the energy part of it, have converted to solar because of load shedding. So mm-hmm. that's just one way that you as a person can actually take a bit of control and initiative and have a positive impact. But you can also do so through how you invest and the impact of that on the companies that eventually sit within your portfolio.
Yeah, and that is, I mean, whether it's individual stocks and voting at AGMs, whether it's retirement funds, perhaps even unit trusts, is asking the questions. And in many senses, asking the questions and, as always the case, yeah, vote with your wallet.
Absolutely. And the nice thing about that is you can either have an indirect impact on ESG issues through your investment,
mm-hmm.
or you can have a direct impact. You know, some of the funds are impact funds, which means the money that you invest goes directly into things like infrastructure development, etc., which in South Africa is a need, whether you look at it from the perspective of energy, mm-hmm. or even other things like schooling, etc. We need infrastructure in the country. But you can have that indirect or direct impact while reaching your lifestyle or financial goals, which for me is a no-brainer. Why would you not want to reach your goals from a financial or lifestyle perspective that you've always had? But if you're able to do so at the same time while having a more positive impact on the world, on society, on the environment, it's a double win.
Yeah, I take your point. No-brainer. Gonzo Sarzi, head of retail client management, Old Mutual Investment Group. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Chatting with Dr. Chris Homser yesterday around Q1 GDP, that it came in slightly better than expected. Economy now back at the pre-pandemic levels, and that was the biggie. It took us 9 quarters, but we got there. And our question on our LinkedIn and Twitter was, had you expected the economy to recover quite so quickly, or perhaps you thought it would take longer, or about right? And we had those three options, and it was kind of evenly split on between the Twitter and the LinkedIn in terms of, nope, it took longer than you thought, was about right, or perhaps faster. I think for me it was about right. I was looking for 2022 to be the year we got back, maybe last quarter of last year, but for me it was about the right. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website, the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're talking income from the UK.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.